Hello, welcome to the Lean of Plants podcast. My name is Chelsea, and if you are struggling to lose weight on a plant-based diet, then this podcast is for you. While there are thousands of books, podcasts, and resources about the benefits of a plant-based diet, the reality is that being vegan does not guarantee losing weight. If you are feeling frustrated and confused about where to start, or you know exactly what you should be doing, but you just can't seem to rustle up enough willpower to do it, then keep listening. In this podcast, you'll learn the truth about plant-based weight loss, but just as importantly, how to use proven methods of behavioral change to turn what you know into lifelong habits that lead to getting and staying lean. Can't wait to get started. Let's do this. Hello, hello, welcome to the episode. I'm super pumped for this one. I know that I say that pretty much every episode, but I had a few questions recently about why potatoes are amazing, because I put a reel out and I was just saying how potatoes have changed my life, and all of this started with me doing something called the Potato Reset, where I went from trying to be a bit of a raw vegan or raw till four, eating a ton of raw food, salads, smoothies, freezing my butt off in winter, to eating a ton of soups and stews and potatoes and vegetables, and actually losing 8 pounds within the first month that I did that. And so I posted this piece of Instagram content the other day. It was basically my love for potatoes. It was a homage to the humble russet. And people were asking why. Like, why are potatoes great? It really got me thinking that with all the information, or I should say misinformation or confusion about what we should eat for weight loss. Calories, carbs, fat, keto, carnivore diet, paleo, intermittent fasting. It's actually really confusing when someone comes out and says, I lost weight eating potatoes, if you've grown up hearing that potatoes are bad for you. So what I want to do in this episode is give you the keys to the kingdom. And these are the three weight loss principles, fundamentals that I live my life by, and that every single person that we see inside of our program, and many, many others, I would say anyone within the plant-based community who is absolutely crushing it, losing weight, keeping it off, with this way of eating, high carb, low fat, calorie density, all of those things. And if that sounds like those words mean nothing to you, we'll go over them. Everyone is using these fundamentals and these principles, whether they realize it or not. And so once you understand them, you can create solid habits around them that are going to help you lose all of the weight and also keep it off. And the reason that this matters so much, as opposed to following rules, is that we really do want to, first of all, be able to lose all of the weight that you want to. You don't want to just get to 20 pounds in, lose that, and then still have 50 pounds to go that you struggle with for the rest of your life. Like, I don't want that. I don't think that you want that either. Most people have been doing that kind of cycle for a long time. Most people don't keep off the initial 20 pounds though, unfortunately. It's a hard fact of life. We also want to be able to maintain it. The more that I do my own maintenance journey, and now that it's been four, coming up 5 years, that I've maintained a body I only dreamed of for decades, busier than I've ever been, more stressed than I've ever been, less time than I've ever had, two children, difficult situations with my husband having MS and mental health problems and all these other things, not him, me. The fact that I get to exist and show up in a body that I love, that I can have the freedom in my behavior and my habits and how I eat, that food is a small portion of my life rather than the controlling factor, that is the ultimate gift of all of this. That not just that I lost the weight, but I now get to maintain it. So weight maintenance, in my opinion, is the biggest piece to this. It's creating flexibility and nuance so that you can actually live your life. It's being able to have times where you pause in your weight loss journey and you don't regress and gain all that weight back. It's being able to go through hard times and have stressful situations, have times where you're on your period and you need to eat more comfort food. Not need to, you do eat more comfort food. Those days when you're just struggling to get by, those times when you're working 60-hour weeks and the kids are sick and you just do order the takeout pizza. When you have this knowledge and you have the ability and how to implement it, you can keep losing, you can have pauses, you can build a lifestyle, and you will be able to stay there with principles that guide rather than rules. That is confidence and that is freedom. If we're going to have rules to live by and principles about weight loss, then we really need to understand why weight loss occurs in the first place. This is like giving your child a rule, don't touch something that's hot, and then them never understanding that hot is actually going to burn them. That if they touch the stove or an open flame, there's going to be pain associated with that. There's always got to be a reason and a why to the principles that we have. And this is what takes something from being just fear-based to actually being empowerment. When it comes to weight loss, calories are where it's at. And what that means is that at the most basic level, in order to maintain, lose, or gain weight, so everything around weight that you have in your body, or stored fat, I should say, is about calories. And calories are just a unit of energy. They're not negative. They are not triggering. They are not anything bad, that in the same way that rain is not bad. If you want to go out and skate every day and it's been raining for the past 6 months like it has in New Zealand, that starts to feel pretty negative. But it's not inherent. There's nothing inherently wrong with that. It's just something that happens. And so calories are really just a measurement that we give to really how different foods have different units. So it's like a cup measurement or like a liter or a foot or anything like that. And when it comes to the calories inside of foods, there is a vast difference. There is a huge spectrum in terms of calorie density. So calorie density is the amount of calories that are in a given weight of food. And why this matters is that there are some foods that are so high in calorie density that even a very, very small amount of them, we will eat more calories than we need. There are also foods that are so low in calorie density that for a large amount of them, we will struggle and we will never be able to eat more calories than we need because our stomachs are just not large enough. And where this comes into play is that if we have more calories than we need, our bodies store that excess energy, because it's just a unit of energy, remember that. They store that excess energy as fat. Any fat cells that you have that you're wanting to get rid of, muffin top or like the thigh fat, love handles, all of those horrible words that I probably shouldn't be saying because it's bad and it's triggering. Let's just call it what it is, right? The stuff that you want gone on your body is because of an excess of calories at some point and your body has gone, hey, I'm going to store those because they can't be created or destroyed. Rule of thermodynamics. Energy can neither be created or destroyed. It has to go somewhere. So if you're not using it to power your body on a day-to-day basis, it's got to go somewhere. So your body converts that into fat. It stores it as fat and you go on throughout your day. And this is the reason that we have that weight creep up through the years. We typically tend to move less as we age. We also have muscle loss and bone density loss as we age. And so all these things mean that we actually need slightly less calories as we age. It's about this is purely from memory, but I think it's about 700 calories, between 500 and 700 calories less between the ages of 20 and 70. That's actually quite a big difference in terms of not the volume of food on your plate, but in terms of the calories that you can eat and maintain your weight. So if you're suddenly eating more calories, if you're eating the same amount of calories, but now you need less for whatever reason, then you're going to put on weight. If you somehow are eating more calories, which is typically, it's a combination of the two, but we can eat far more than we can ever lose. Like 700 calories, it sounds like a lot over the course of a lifetime, but you can be eating in the difference of 7,000 calories in terms of what comes into your mouth. I don't know if you've ever Googled on YouTube, like ultimate cheat days, or people that do 10,000 calorie cheat days, or 30,000 calorie days. There is absolutely no way you can do a workout that is 30,000 calories. There is not an equal and opposite equivalent when it comes to calories in versus calories out. So if you're wanting to lose fat, then you must get into what is known as a calorie deficit. So this is where you're eating less calories than you need. So your body goes, I'm not getting the energy that I need. So remember, energy can neither be created or destroyed. Your body needs to get it from somewhere. It dips into that rainy day fund and it starts to use that as energy because you're not getting enough from the food that you're eating. So that's how weight loss works. Weight loss 101, super simple. So when we understand that, we can go, okay, so if I need to get into a calorie deficit to lose fat, then the most important thing when it comes to what I eat for weight loss is, am I eating things that are low in calorie density? Because then I'm going to be able to eat more food while still losing weight. I'm going to be able to eat the same amount or more, not feel hungry, not feel deprived. Because if I do feel hungry and deprived, I'm most likely going to go and have a binge at some point. I'm most likely not going to be able to stick to my diet. Because remember what we talked about in the beginning, you want this to be for life. Like, let's get really serious about this. Let's widen our timelines and think a little bit more long term than just the next 6 weeks or just the next couple of weeks until a wedding's coming up or some kind of event or a vacation. What matters is that you can maintain this for life. So what you do in order to lose it must be doable for the rest of your life, otherwise it won't be maintainable. So understanding calorie density is the number one most important principle in terms of being able to lose weight. If we were to think about this like a pyramid, then calorie density is at the bottom. Every single other thing is built on calorie density if you want to lose weight the way that I have. And I want to put a disclaimer here that there are many, many ways that you can lose weight. You do not have to use calorie density. In saying that, maybe I should have said this differently. Now that I'm thinking about it, the absolute bottom of the pyramid is that you have to be in a calorie deficit. And then the second part of that pyramid, if we were to see one of those really old, outdated food pyramids, they've got the bread on the bottom and the grains, that would be getting into a calorie deficit. And then I think there's like fruits and vegetables on the second one. That's going to be calorie density. Because every single diet works by getting someone into a calorie deficit, whether that is keto or a high carb diet, a low fat diet, a high fat diet, a low carb diet, intermittent fasting, cutting portion sizes. They all work by cutting calories in some way. The easiest way to do that is using calorie density, simply because you are able to eat the same, if not more, and it does not have to feel like dieting. So when it comes to calorie density, there are three calorie density rules. Obviously, they're not rules. I hate rules. As you can see from this episode, this is much more about principles. But these are the principles that govern how calorie dense a certain food is. And the first one is water content of food. Water is the biggest influencer of calorie density more than any other factor. So if some kind of food has a lot of water in it, then it is going to be much, much lower in calories than something that doesn't have water. You could have like a drop of oil. If you think about this, if you have a drop of oil in a liter of water with some flavoring and you call that a soup, that's a pretty disgusting, gross soup. Maybe you put a vegan chicken stock in there. Then if you were to have that entire liter, which is going to really fill up your stomach, then all you're really having in terms of calories is that one tablespoon of oil. There's, in terms of volume, the 100% of the calories in that food are coming from the oil. It could be oil, it could be a potato, it could be some sugar, it could be anything else. When you think about a soda, 100% of the calories of that are coming from the sugar. They're not coming from the water. Water has zero calories. So water dilutes the calorie density of a food big time. The funny thing is that most whole foods are actually really water dense. I think all the foods that are ready to eat when you either pick them out of the ground or you pick them off a tree are really, really water dense. So things like vegetables are 95% water. They're hugely full of water. You're basically just having a huge soup when you eat broccoli. Fruits are really full of water. Things like potatoes. Other whole foods like grains and seeds are not high in water. But for grains, we normally cook them in water. You don't eat raw rice, you normally add water to it. You don't have raw barley, you normally add some kind of water to it. Even if you have something like wheat, which is normally extracted into flour, you tend to add water to that cooking process and then sometimes dry it out again and things like crackers. But water is a big part, or tends to be a huge part of a whole food in its natural form before it has any kind of processing. So the biggest rule to understand, or principle when it comes to deciding about what to eat, is to ask yourself, is this a water-rich food? Is there any way that I could actually add more water to it? And the simplest question here, or the simplest solution I should say, is to just add non-starchy vegetables. Because like I said, they're 95% water. So the more that you eat, the more that you offset your calories, which means that you are eating the same amount of food. We'll do it two ways. First example, you eat the same amount of food. You have half of the portion of whatever non-watery food you normally eat. Let's say that's a burger. And I did this tonight, so I can very clearly remember it, and I do this a lot. So I wanted to eat burgers, and I also wanted to have some potato chips with that. And so I made my burger. I had like a handful of air-fried potatoes that I'd made myself, steamed them up, put them in the air fryer, and then I actually had a pound of broccoli. So I had a pound of steamed broccoli. And so if I was to eat a burger on its own without a pound of broccoli, I'd normally finish that burger and be still kind of hungry for something else, because that's me. I have a reasonably large appetite. But because I had a burger with potatoes, with a head of broccoli, I had this huge plate before me and I was done. So if you think that normally to get full, I would need two burgers or I would need a large portion of potatoes in order to get full, I've now reduced my calories because half of my plate was actually broccoli. This is the methodology behind the 50-50 plate, if you're familiar with that, which is really that you just put 50% of your plate non-starchy vegetables. There's nothing magical about the 50-50 plate. All it does is attempt to reduce the calorie density of your meals, therefore reducing the calories, therefore getting you into a calorie deficit so that you lose fat. That's all it is. Just because it's simple does not mean that it's not magical though. And this is the most simple, most actionable thing that you can take away, and that what I have done and what we do inside of our program, like no secrets held back, we just ask people, not just, there's a whole lot of involved in this, and there's a lot of accountability which comes into it as well, but a huge part of that is simply building a habit of eating a lot of vegetables every day. We normally start with about a pound, because a pound seems to be a sweet spot where you do have to be very intentional at least two meals a day or your snacks to be able to get that in. Building that intentional habit of adding non-starchy vegetables, adding water, reducing the calories in your diet by addition is the first, and I would say the most impactful habit that you can have when you're trying to lose weight, and then also maintaining that. I still do that to this day. I eat a buttload of veggies. It's a real measurement. Look it up. It's an old-fashioned one. And it helps. It so helps. And this is one of the habits that tends to slip when people start to gain weight back, is they do not maintain the veggie eating habit. It's actually the easiest one to do though, because you can add veggies to everything. You can have a side of pizza and put veggies with it. You can make a creamy Alfredo and add mushrooms and garlic and broccoli and asparagus and peas. Peas are not a non-starchy vegetable, by the way. I did want to put that out there because peas and corn, you know those little packets of them that you get? Sometimes they have carrot in there as well. They're awesome. They're absolutely amazing. Peas and corn are not non-starchy vegetables. They do not have the same water content as things like green beans, broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, any kind of other cruciferous vegetables. They're just not as high in water, so they do not offset calories in the same way. They're still amazing to eat, mind you, but if you're wanting to get in a pound of veggies like we do inside a Learn Your Plants, then aim for non-starchy vegetables, which is pretty much every other vegetable except things like potatoes and beets, and there's a few other things in there. So that's the addition habit. And then when it comes to the subtraction, think about the foods that are really dry. Think about the foods that don't have a lot of water or they've had some water removed. These are foods like breads, crackers, nuts, seeds. They are things like oil. Anything that has had the water removed is going to naturally be higher in calories. So where possible, if you can eat the whole food version of that, or you can find a way to choose an option that has got more water in it. For example, if you are going to have oats, it would be better for you to cook them as a porridge as opposed to just having them as a cereal because there's more water in it. If you can do that and you can think like that, then it's going to make it a lot easier for you to get into a calorie deficit. I will get into some specifics and go over specific foods a bit later in the episode as well, so keep listening. The second most important calorie density principle is fiber. Fiber is undigestible plant matter. Your body can't break it down. And what that means is that as you are eating fiber, because your body can't break it down and your intestine can't actually absorb those calories, you're not getting the calories from the fiber that you eat. It's stuck inside those cellulose walls. So when you're eating whole foods that contain a lot of fiber, then you're eating a lot of roughage that isn't going to be digested by you, your gut microbiome, which is good. That's a good thing. They eat it. It's comfort food for them. They love fiber. And there's tons of helpful things that happen when you eat fiber, which I'm not going to go into because I've covered this in another episode, which I will link. But the benefit of fiber as opposed to water is that it helps you to stay fuller for longer because it's bulk. So fiber plus water is this magical combination where it adds and it creates this kind of jelly-like substance which fills up your stomach and it helps you to feel full where just water on its own won't. And this is a reason that something like a potato or a broccoli is going to keep you more full than if you were to just drink water. Even though the broccoli itself is just 95% water, you're also having the fiber with that. Naturally high fiber foods are things like beans, legumes, and whole grains. To a lesser extent, potatoes, fruits, and veggies, but like I mentioned, they're very, very high in water. So just 5% coming from fiber and coming from carbohydrates and these other things that make up the nutritional profile or the skeleton, the makeup, whatever you want to call it, of those foods, means that there's just not a lot left over for fiber. So it's really, really important to be eating these high fiber foods, beans, legumes, whole grains. But more importantly, well, not more importantly, that's super important. But where it's important to understand how fiber fits into calorie density is to understand that processing, it removes fiber. It also removes water. So both of these things go down when you process a food. And so what happens is that you start with something that is very bulky. There's a lot of volume to it. And I'm going to give the example of sugar beets because there are two main sources of processed crystalline sugar and that they are sugar cane and sugar beets. I did not know that there were sugar beets about 4 years ago. And I found out because I watched some YouTube videos, which you can Google. The processing is really interesting. There's so much that goes into making sugar. But you start with this huge quantity of beets or sugarcane. I like thinking about this in terms of sugar beets because we can all imagine eating beets or eating turnips or potatoes, something that you could actually cut up and bake or mash. And it feels much more like a real food than something like sugarcane, which you can gnaw on, but it's, you're not going to eat a sugarcane. It's very fibrous. So to produce sugar, there are these sugar beets that are then taken and they are like boiled up. They have the skins removed. They have, they are cooked. And then the water, the juicy kind of water of that is extracted. So you think about juicing something, and I'm going into the specifics of making sugar, which I really don't know enough about, but I understand the concept. So please don't go, hey, that's not how you make sugar if you work in the sugar industry. I'm sorry. And by the way, you probably didn't know this, but my dad used to work at the sugar factory in New Zealand, and it's called Chelsea Sugar. And my name is Chelsea, so I'm just saying there's some weird stuff there. Anyway, moving right along. So you essentially take out all the fiber. That's the first step. You're taking out all of the fiber in the sugar beet and you're juicing it. I don't know if you've ever juiced a carrot or an apple. It's really fun. Or celery. People that drink celery juice, like, kudos to you. That stuff is disgusting. I will not be doing it. But you take something and then you see all that fiber that's removed. It goes into that little container. Most of us have done this, so I feel like we can visualize it a bit better. It goes into that little container and then you're left with the juice and you drink the juice if you're someone who's into juicing. As you will see, I am not for this reason, because fiber is such a valuable and important part of us not overeating on calories. Because what's left, let's go back to sugar beets, what's left is the juice from the beets. It's still got the water intact, which is great. So you're getting a bit of bulk from the water. You're getting the benefits of the water there. But now the problem is, because you're not actually consuming that with the fiber, it's unable to form the bulk in your stomach. It doesn't create that gel-like substance where it binds together and helps you to feel fuller. And so this is why if you drink juice, if you drink soda, even though there can be a lot of calories in that, you're not going to feel more full. It doesn't contribute to fullness at all, which is really unfortunate, because you can drink a drink that is like 700 calories. You can drink 6 apples and then go on and have a full meal. It's very hard to eat 6 apples. It's very hard to sit there unless you're a horse. Think about something like carrots. It's very hard to eat 20 carrots. Extremely hard. Like, you will go orange if you do that. You probably go orange if you drink that many carrots as well. It's quite easy to drink 20 carrots. I've done it. Because once you remove all that pesky fiber, you can drink a lot in a short space of time. When it comes to processing the sugar beets, though, we take it a step further. So not only have you now removed the fiber, which was a huge part of the bulk, a massive part of the bulk, you're now actually removing the water as well. You're drying it. You're getting that valuable, amazing water, which is what lowers the calorie density the most, and you're left with a crystalline substance, which is pure calories. It's the purest form of that. And this is the thing that I think gets missed when people talk about sugar and why it's quote-unquote bad. Sugar is not bad when you talk about that in terms of fructose or carbohydrates or anything that is inside of a food, the macronutrient. That is not negative in any way, shape or form. Well, in some shapes or forms. It's not a negative thing. The problem is that when you condense it down and you remove the fiber and the water, it's what you're not getting that is the issue. Because if you were to take 10 kilos, I'm going to try and do pounds. It's like 20 pounds. It's so funny. I can do pounds for people's weights, but weights of food above 2 pounds, I would always do kilos. If you were to take 20 pounds of sugar beets, and you were to process it down into sugar, the amount of sugar that is in the 20 pounds, like that amount is not increased. Like that amount is the same. So if you were to eat 20 pounds of sugar beets, you'd get the same amount of sugar as if you were to eat the sugar from when all of the water and fiber had been taken away. It's just the concentration. So you start with a very large amount of something, and then you remove all the, if it was gold, you'd call it impurities. I think everyone understands what I'm saying. And then you're just left with the refined product. And so that refined product, when you don't have the water and the fiber, will be a fraction of the size and a fraction of the volume of the original, but the calories remain the same. So now you've got maybe a tablespoon. I think it really is a similar ratio. Don't quote me on this, but I watched a video where someone made basically sugar beet syrup themselves at home, and they had this humongous pot of beets. It was a huge amount. Like I'm thinking it was at least 10 pounds of beets that they put in this huge pot. And what they were left with was about 2 tablespoons of liquid from that processing. So the issue is not the fact that sugar is sugar. The issue is that you're not getting the fiber and the water. And then the biggest issue of this is you're getting all of the same calories, because it becomes incredibly calorie dense. So you think about this from a purely physiological possibility standpoint. Are you able to eat 10 kilos or 20 pounds of beets? That would take most people days and weeks. You cannot physically do that in a day. It's impossible. Can you have a tablespoon or 2 tablespoons of sugar? Yes, 100%. So you're eating the equivalent of what hundreds of years ago, maybe more. But processing is kind of crazy. Like food processing and food technology and the amount of calories that we have available to us as a society are related. Like the more advanced we get with technology in terms of extracting and the cheaper that gets, the more calories we eat. Like those things are connected, which is, it's obvious, it makes sense. And then that's related to how much weight we're gaining as a society. Like this is not rocket science. It's just cause and effect. Like there's no crazy mystery around why we're so overweight these days compared to 100 years ago or 200 years ago or any time throughout human history. And like, yeah, people will talk about, well, we're moving less, we've got cars, we've got all of these things, we're sitting on our butts. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit of it. But in saying that, where someone hundreds and hundreds of years ago would have had very little access to the amount of sugar and the amount of processed food that we have today, and they would have had been eating more things like beets and potatoes and grains and things that were less processed, because processing requires technology, power, it requires there to be you have to be able to store things without being eating them straight away. So you think about a normal farmer and his family who are harvesting beets or pumpkins or potatoes, the amount that they can actually eat of those, even if they're absolutely stuffing themselves, which they weren't, is very low in calories compared to how much we can eat today just by having a few sips of a soda. There's a cookie that I really like to eat. It's just another analogy, another story of how powerful this is. There's a cookie that I really love, and it's unfortunately about 500 calories. It's a little plant-based cookie. It comes in a single serve. I normally will have that or half of that for dessert quite often. I shouldn't say normally. I'm in weight maintenance, okay? I am not looking to necessarily be in a deficit or necessarily be in a surplus. I definitely don't want to gain weight, but I'm not someone who's like really, really actively trying to lose weight, so I can afford to eat a few more calories because I'm not trying to get into a deficit, okay? Anyway, 500 calories is a similar amount to 2/3 of a pound of broccoli and a head of, sorry, 2 pounds, 2/3 of a pound of potatoes and a head of broccoli, like a huge portion of food. So you think about one of those things is going to keep me really full and satisfied. The other thing is going to mean that it's incredibly easy to overeat. Because one of them I can eat in a few minutes, the next is going to take me about half an hour, and I'm going to be stuffed. So on a practical level, choosing foods in their whole form, asking yourself how much processing has this been through. The more processing a food has been through, the higher in calorie density it most likely is. Again, we'll go into some of the specifics a little bit later on. But it's a very easy thing to think about. Does this still have the fiber in it? Has this had any processing? If it doesn't have water and it's not something that can go off in a couple of days, then it probably, or something that you have to cook with water for it to be palatable, like beans and legumes and any kind of whole grains, then it probably has had the fiber removed. The third principle is understanding macronutrients. Macronutrients are just the three building blocks of calories. You have fat, carbohydrates, and protein. The interesting thing is that these are not created equal when it comes to calorie density. Carbs and protein are the same. They come out at about 4 calories per gram. So if you have a pure carbohydrate source, like something like sugar, right? Because there's no water to offset that. There's no protein to offset that. Everything else, there's no fiber. Everything has been removed. So if you were to take a gram of sugar, then that's going to be about 4 calories because it's the pure carbohydrate form. Contrast that with fat. Fat's really interesting because fat is like this little powerhouse of calories. So fat is about 9 calories per gram. And when you think about this from a logical standpoint, it makes a lot of sense. Because if our bodies are going to store something, then it makes sense for that to be the most efficient way to do that. Like, the more bang for your buck you can get, if I can store away 9 units of energy for only 1 gram, it's much better to do that with fat than it is carbohydrates. So the fat that we eat, and the fat within our bodies, whatever, it's equivalent to 9 calories per gram. And so what happens is that if we are eating a diet that is high in fat, then even if we're eating the same volume, we're eating more than double the amount of calories. For the same amount of volume, if we're eating more carbs and protein, we can lower the calories than if it was coming from fat by more than half. Now, obviously, you're not going to eat solely carbs and solely protein. You're going to have some fat in your diet as well. Unless you're keto, and the inverse of that is we don't want to have any carbs and we just want to eat fat. Like, neither of those things actually work. You're going to have all three macronutrients in your diet. But what you want to be thinking about is, if fat is higher in calorie density, then I'm going to structure my diet to have less of it proportionately than carbs and protein. And the other interesting thing about this is that all of those whole foods that I talked about, vegetables, potatoes, whole grains, beans, all of those things are naturally highest in carbohydrates. And when it comes to even calorie for calorie, when you compare carbs to fat, carbs, calorie for calorie, tend to be better for weight loss than fat because there is a burning process. There is an efficiency loss when you have to convert carbohydrates. Your body has to convert carbohydrates into stored fat. It's like if you go pick up something from an IKEA and you've got to assemble it all, and then it's finally ready and it looks like the picture on the box or what you saw in the showroom. There's an efficiency loss in that your time was required to actually create that thing. Whereas if you just get the furniture to your door and it's ready made, there's no conversion process in that, not for you anyway. And so fat's similar. When you eat fat, it is stored as fat. And so this, I think, is where the phrase, the fat you eat is the fat you wear. I don't really see that as reflected in the science, in that any fat that you eat is going to turn into fat in your body. Like, it doesn't work like that. We're always burning fat at the same time, right? Like, our body has almost got this flame inside of us where we're constantly burning fat. So just because you're having fat in your diet doesn't mean that you're going to gain fat or not be able to lose weight. As long as you're in a calorie deficit, you will be able to lose weight, and you can and should have some healthy fats in your diet. But choosing things that are naturally lower in fat and they are higher in whole food, water-rich carbohydrates with protein is a much better use or it's a much lower calorie density option than just choosing fat. The other thing that's really interesting about this is that naturally, high fat sources are actually not super high in calories. Like they can be pretty high, but think about something like avocado. It's a natural fat source. It's only about 750 calories per pound. That's kind of similar to pasta or something like tofu. Tofu is actually a little bit less. It does have some fat content in there as well, which is what bumps it up. And there's some processing involved in that. But 750 calories, when we look at that on a spectrum, which we will do, is actually not crazy. The reason for that is that there is water and there is fiber and there's also some carbohydrates inside of avocado. So even if you were to eat a whole avocado, you're not actually getting as many calories as you would when you eat a processed form of fat, which is something like oil. Because when you process fat, you're doing everything that we did by removing water and removing removing fiber, but now we're doing it on steroids because we're now left with double what happens than when we process carbs or protein. You think about that. You start with the same kind of product. You start with a carbohydrate-rich product. You start with something like sugar beets. You remove all of the water. You remove all of the fiber. You're left with something that is 4 calories per gram. Now, you do the same thing with an avocado or a seed or a nut or an olive. You take out all of the water. You take out all of the fiber. By the way, when you remove water and fiber, you're also removing micronutrients. And this is one of the most detrimental things of processing. It's not just that that water and fiber are absolutely vital to our weight maintenance, to our weight loss, to our health, our longevity, all of these things, you're removing vital micronutrients in that process. Funnily enough, sugar is not a nutrient-dense product, and neither is oil. But now you're left with 9 calories per gram, not just 4, more than double. And this is the biggest issue when it comes to processing and creating pure fat sources, is that they are extremely calorie-dense. And you're not getting the benefits of the water and the fiber. So things like oil and removing oil from your diet, it is the number one easy subtraction that you can make that is going to have an impact of hundreds, if not thousands of calories to your diet. Whether that is cooking with oil, whether that is choosing to not purchase foods that have oil. Like if you just don't eat oil, your diet is going to be so much lower in calories than it was if you are eating any kind of other foods, because most processed foods has oil. Most processed foods has got flour, processed, sugar, processed, oil, processed, refined, fiber, water, gone. Oil added, way more oil than you could put, way more calories from fat than you could possibly eat in the raw form, like olives. Like how many olives could you really eat? Not a lot. How much oil can you eat? Deep fried donut? I'll be eating oil all day. So when we put this all together, I thought of this really clever little way to remember this. And then once we look at that, we're going to go over some practical ways to do this. We're going to look at the calorie density chart and we're going to go over these three things and how these different three principles influences the calorie density. This is not a clever analogy, but I liked it. You guys know, or if you listen to the podcast, I did an episode all about AI, and I was using ChatGPT to help me to come up with some like really clever and cool way to remember that you want to choose high water, high fiber or fiber intact, and then low fat, or choose carbohydrates. That's what I wanted to figure out how to do it. I'm not kidding. I spent a full 20 minutes. They were giving me words. I was like, what words have got like a C in them for carbs, and then also an H for water. I mean, H isn't water. W for water, or H for H2O. And like they were giving me like such lame words. Like I had words like chief and like farm works and weird things like that. And then I thought about it. I think some people are going to laugh. Some people are just going to go over your head. But if you grew up in a Christian home like I did, then and you were born in the 80s or 90s, you probably at some point had a WWJD bracelet. And WWJD stands for What Would Jesus Do? Which is essentially a little reminder. I don't know if it ever worked, but it's a little reminder to be kind, not be like mean, not steal, like all the things. Like, what would Jesus do? He was a pretty good guy. So I thought about it. I was like, I've got water, I've got Whole Foods, Vibrant Tech, because Whole Foods. What would Chelsea do? Which is WWCD. So what would Chelsea do? So in order to remember this, when you're coming up to it, I want you to think WWCD. Well, you don't have to think this. If this is helpful, take it. If not, throw it in the bin and burn it. I don't care. What would Chelsea do? Water, Whole Foods, so fiber intact, carbs. And then the D is duh. I thought it would smart. So it's what would Chelsea do? And then it's also water, Whole Foods, fiber intact, and carbs. Duh. So the question to ask yourself is, what would Chelsea do? No, I'm kidding. WWCD. It's like, I feel like I'm the girl on Mean Girls. She's like, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. The question that I ask myself on a daily basis, subconsciously now, because I've been doing it for 4 years, but it's still the same question, is how do I reduce the calorie density on my day to day? And my days are not static. I have days where I'm on my period and I want a cookie and I will eat out occasionally and I will order a pizza. And so this question allows me to do the best that I can and see my eating habits on a spectrum and try and do the best that I can in any situation. I'm not doing it to be all or nothing. And I talk about that a lot in this podcast, which is all about the behavioral stuff. And I don't want to go into that because this is very much practical. But the two most important and easy questions that we can ask as a first step is, number one, it's an addition question. How can I add more vegetables, potatoes, or fruit to this? Because they're extremely low in calorie density. The more you do this, if you change nothing else, and if you stuff yourself with veggies and potatoes, you will eat less calories. I guarantee it. There is no physical way that you cannot. The second question is, how can I reduce or eliminate oil? The reason for this is that oil, like I said, is extremely high in calories. It is actually the highest calorie food on the planet, which when you think about it, makes a lot of sense. Because how do we increase the calorie density of a food? Well, first of all, we remove the water. And I know that oil looks like it has water in it because it's a liquid. It doesn't. Because what happens when you try and mix water and oil? They don't mix. So oil is not full of water, even though it's liquid. Wow, mind-blowing stuff here. Like, look at this. This is a physics lesson. So we've got oil, and it's got no fiber as well. And then because it is a fat source, it's also higher in calories. So how could you possibly get something that is higher in calories than that? You can't. It's physically impossible. Pretty crazy, right? Like, this is hopefully you're starting to understand these concepts and this just makes logical sense. Nothing can be more calorie dense than oil because it's reached its pinnacle. On the other end of the spectrum, so oil, 4,000 calories. On the other spectrum, yeah, why can't I say spectrum? So extreme is non-starchy vegetables. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, tomatoes, which are not technically a fruit, but they're low in calorie density, is the same as a vegetable. Cucumber, courgette, zucchini, whatever you want to call it, leeks, onions, garlic, all of those things. Only about 100 calories per pound. Why? Why are they so calorie dense? Let's use these three things. Let's say WWCD, water, whole foods, carbs, vegetables, are made of carbohydrates. Like, that's the predominant macronutrient. They also are 95% water. That's a huge quantity of water. There is nothing that is higher in water than that. They also have fiber intact, right? But the biggest influencer here is the water. That's why they're so low in calories. And so because they're the highest concentration of water and they are also a carbohydrate source, mostly carbohydrates, that is why they're the lowest calorie foods on the planet. Is this starting to make sense? Like, obviously you can't nod or anything, but you can put your hand up and wave like a crazy person. Next to, we're going to go up the spectrum. The next thing that we have on the list is fruits. And so fruits tend to be about 200 calories per pound. The reason that they're slightly higher in vegetables tends to be because they are less watery. Crazy, right? Because they're still mostly made from carbohydrates. They still have the fiber intact, but they're not as watery. Things like bananas, persimmons, I'm going to think of all like apples, I'm trying to think of what other pears, like you know what the fruits are. So they're not quite as watery, which means that they're slightly higher in calorie density. And then if you think about this, you want to have a lower calorie fruit, you choose a more water-rich fruit, something like berries, which are really low in calorie density, like kind of similar to vegetables actually. You want to have a higher calorie dense fruit, you choose one that doesn't have much water, something like dates or banana. And so this is a way that you can either speed up or slow down your weight loss by the choices that you make. Instead of grabbing a banana, you could grab some berries, like if you were going to snack. Like it's a simple swap to make, or an apple. It's a simple swap, but it is going to lower your calories. Now, bear in mind, this is still a very, very small amount. Like you're splitting hairs at this point. So while it might matter at some point in your weight loss, you've got to be asking yourself, like, what is the choice that I'm actually making? And this is where behavior comes in. Am I going to actually, like, is the banana going to help me because it's easier to grab? Or am I going to go and get, like, Starbucks? Like, it's a choice between what you will do and the best choice that you can make. There's not a good or a bad choice. There's just a best and a better, or a worst and a worser. That's like that. My English is so bad tonight. I mean, it is after 9 p.m., like I gotta say. So it's a spectrum. It's a spectrum of choices, just like it's a spectrum of calorie density. And so you gotta ask yourself, like, am I splitting hairs here? Like, does it really matter? For most people, no, it doesn't really matter. But for me personally, like what I did, because I had this knowledge, is that I would try and choose things like apples. I would eat mandarins and I would still eat bananas. I definitely would. But my go-to when I go to the supermarket is, like, especially if you live somewhere where you can get berries, like eat a buttload of berries. They're so flipping amazing and they're so good for you as well. Next on the spectrum, we have potatoes. Da-da-da-da. Potatoes are about 400 calories per pound. So they're the third lowest food in terms of calorie density. Like that's actually a quite a lot of potatoes. And the reason, there's also peas and corn in that. So green peas, corn on the cob, these things are, they're about the same in terms of calorie density. And again, it's because they've got less of a water content than non-starchy vegetables. So their carbohydrate content is higher. Next, we've got whole grains. And so this is when they're cooked with water. They're about 500 calories per pound. If they are not cooked with water, if you just grab out a handful of rice and you weigh out a pound of rice, that is a whole lot more than 500 calories. A whole lot more. But you don't eat it that way. So we tend to measure it in terms of the way that you would actually eat it. So if you were to measure out a pound of cooked rice, it's going to be about 500 calories, give or take. And whole grains tend to sit in that. Why? Well, because we added a ton of water. Like, that's why they wouldn't have been. They wouldn't have been calorie dilute if we didn't add the water. And then they do have fiber. This is another thing that helps. So the more fiber they have, if you've got brown rice or you've got oat groats as opposed to oat flakes or quick oats, that's going to be better for you. Why? Because you've got more fiber in there. If you've got a choice of how you cook it, your oats. Because I know, like, I personally don't really like to use a lot of water. And I don't tend to cook my oats on the stove. So I'm making a choice that the way I eat my oats is less calorie dense, or more calorie dense, I should say, than if I was to cook it on the stove. Why? Because I'm adding more water when I cook porridge on the stove. And I could make a watery porridge. You have a thick porridge versus a watery porridge. Which one's more calorie dense? The thick porridge. So you get to choose what you do with that knowledge. But 600 calories per pound is not something to be really freaking out about. So all of these things are still things you should eat in abundance. Eat as much as you want, especially if you're eating a ton of vegetables, which is going to help offset those calories. We're building up. So now we're looking at something like tofu. Tofu is about 650 calories. And so the reason for this, actually I skipped one. So I skipped legumes. So legumes, beans, pulses, like lentils, things like chickpeas, they work out at about 600 calories per pound. They have less water in them as well. They tend to be cooked with less water. They do have a lot of fiber in them, but they just tend to be slightly more calorie dense. And then next we have something like tofu, which again is slightly more calorie dense. And the reason for that is that there's just some processing involved, because you take edamame, or you take soybeans, and then you process it into something like tofu. And you think about the way that you eat tofu, because again, I'm not trying to help you, I'm not trying to get you to split hairs with what you do, but you think about which is going to be more calorie dense. If you were to cook this and press it, a lot of people get mad at me that I don't press my tofu, and I actually don't want my tofu to be really, really dry, because I'm like, well, I get less tofu. I want to have it with a bit more water in it. Also, I'm just lazy, okay? Like, leave me alone, I'm lazy. And so I just like cut it up, I pat it if I'm bothered, and then I put it in the air fryer. So the more that you air fry that, like if that has all the water removed or a big chunk of it, that's going to be more calorie dense than the block that you started with, because you've removed the water. Duh, right? What would Chelsea do? Duh. Next we've got avocado. So this jumps up to about 750 calories because there is a lot more fat to it. Then we've got things like coconut, yogurt, or like coconut meat, or most kind of like yogurt alternatives. They jump up to about 900 calories per pound. And the biggest reason for this is that they normally have oil. So if you were to find a variety, and also because coconuts are high in fat. So if you're to find a variety of a yogurt, like a vegan yogurt that is soy-based or it's almond-based, because that has less fat in it and it doesn't have oil, then it's going to be less calorie dense than a full-fat coconut milk, which is high in fat. And then it also has oil. Like, I'm not saying that it does have oil, but it may do. So simply by looking at the packet and going, is it soy or is it coconut? Or does it have oil or does it not? Like, you can also look at the calories, but that's going to tell you. And I challenge you to just have a look at the packets of things next time you're at the shop, because vegans love, we just love looking at the packets of things anyway to check whether they're vegan. Just check and see, like, do the calories match the fat content? 9 times out of 10, the higher in fat something is, the higher the calories are as well. You can look at the grams or the mils or whatever you ounces. I can't remember what you do there in the States, if that's where you're listening from. Up at about 1,100 calories is dried fruit or things like fresh dates. Why? Because they have the water removed. Wow. Amazing, right? Like, just simply by doing that, you are more than doubling the calories, because most of the fruit is water anyway to begin with. Next, we've got ice cream, and this is going to vary a lot depending on the ice cream that you got. I'm going to do a YouTube video, not specifically on ice cream, but kind of going into with some visuals about this topic. And I got 2 ice creams today for research purposes, guys. Please. Okay, calm down. And they have quite different calorie densities. For the same amount, one of them has double the calories, which is really interesting, right? So simply by having a look at the packet, I can make a choice. Hey, I'm going to choose the ice cream, which is going to taste pretty much the same, that has half the calories, which means I'm going to be eating either half the calories or I'll be able to eat double as much for the same amount of calories. Like, that's an easy choice to make just right there in the supermarkets. You can see how this is really empowered. And do you know why? Do you know what the biggest factor will be? It'll be the ingredients. It'll be whether that has oil or not. That's going to be the biggest factor always. Most ice creams do have oils, but then you also think about this, whether it's a sorbet or not. So like, a sorbet is not going to have any elements in there that make it creamy, because it's not. It's kind of icy. Things that are creamy, like cashews or coconut or almonds or even soy, they're automatically more calorie dense because they tend to have more fat in it than something that's just fruit and water based, because water doesn't have calories. So a sorbet is always going to be, maybe not always, and if it's got really a huge amount more in terms of sugar, it could hypothetically, but when you think about sweetness level of something like ice cream, it tends to be similarly sweet. you don't tend to have an ice cream that is doubly sweet to something else. And even if it was, if you do the math on that, so if you had two ice creams and one was fat-based, so like coconut, or there was a lot of oil in it, and a lot of ice creams, like Ben & Jerry's, it has a lot of oil, like spoiler alert. And then you have a sorbet, which is going to be a lot of sugar, but it's going to be water-based, or fruit-based, which is water-based. Then even if you were to have double the amount of sugar in the fruit-based one, because that's only 4 calories per gram of sugar, if the other one has more fat in it, remember, fat calories are 9 calories per gram. So you'd have to double the sugar content to even match up to it. And that's just assuming that, like, there was, like, not really much in terms of fat content. Like, the math is not mathing with me tonight, but I hope you kind of understand what I'm saying. I haven't got an actual analogy. That's the biggest thing that influences it. We used to have this amazing ice cream in New Zealand that was a soy-based ice cream and didn't have any oil, and I loved it. And funnily enough, it was the lowest calorie dense ice cream that you could get, like way lower than the Halo Top or any of the intentionally low calorie ones. Next on this little chart is we've got bread and processed wheat products. I didn't talk about pasta, but pasta is actually similar to avocado. It's about 750 calories. I missed that out. Why? Well, first of all, and you think about what happens when you create pasta, like this is important to talk about bread as well, is that when you create pasta or bread, you have to start with a wheat product or some kind of similar thing. And then you grind it down, you remove the fiber. So you've automatically made it more calorie dense. And then because there's no water, it's a very, very calorie dense process. It's a very calorie dense food. So if you've got raw pasta, it's had the fiber removed, it's had the water removed, it's very calorie dense, but now you're going to put it in water and you're going to almost rehydrate it, or hydrate it for the first time, in the same way that you would if you're cooking something like rice. So that's why pasta, especially if it's less than al dente, if it's a bit softer, it's going to be lower in calorie density than something like bread, because bread is not as watery as pasta is. So bread tends to be more calorie dense at about 1400 calories per pound. Because yes, it does have water. That's what gives it the softness, the sponginess. We add water, but then it's also got added oil, and it's made from a highly refined product, which is flour. And it tends to have other highly refined products in there as well. So a lot of breads have sugars. Breads can have like things like seeds and nuts, which are not terrible at all. Like I think seeds and nuts are fantastic. But from a weight loss perspective, 1400 calories, when you think about that you could be eating some potato for 400 calories per pound, it'd be far better. You'd be much, much fuller to eat the potatoes as opposed to the bread. I love bread. I flippin' froth over bread. Like, I could eat bread every single day. And since my husband, my dearly beloved, bought us a bread maker and now makes fresh bread for our children for their school lunches, like the amazing person that he is, we wake up every few days when he bakes a new batch, a new loaf, we wake up to the smell of fresh bread. Like, can you imagine what that's like? And I am trying so desperately, since we've had this bread maker in our environment, oof, you know, environment is king. It has been hard, let me tell you. It has smelled amazing, but it has been difficult. I am trying to make a bread a special occasion for myself. I tend to keep it to the weekends for that very reason. I can eat like 3, 4, 5, 6, let's be honest, 8 slices of fresh bread. I can make that into an amazing sandwich. I will have avocado toast for days. Give me all the marmalade. I'm all over that marmalade life. Like, I'm like a granny in a 30-year-old body. But it's calorie dense, and it does not agree. It does not help me stay where I want to stay, and that is why. Next on the list, I've got things like crackers, granola, like dried cereals, anything that tends to be dried in some way, and it's also that wheat form. So what you have in here is two elements. I mean, first of all, it's really obvious. If something's really dry, it's going to be calorie dense because there's no water in it. It's also highly processed, so the fiber has been removed from the wheat. Things like crackers and granola, they tend to be completely dry. Like, they got no water. Like, bread's like, yeah, I've got a little bit of water in me. Not a lot. But then crackers like, I ain't got nothing. But then what happens is they also tend to have oil. Most crackers have oil. So you've got those two confounding factors that bump up those calories to about 1,600 calories per pound. So they're a carb source. They tend to be, but they also tend to have a lot of fat in them as well. And then we've got processed sugar at about 1,800 calories. So that's pretty darn high. Actually, I'm looking at my tiny writing and it looks like crackers are actually in that bucket as well, about 1,800 calories. And then vegan cheese was what I was reading as calories, but it's actually vegan cheese, about 1,600, because it has more water, I'm assuming, from what I know. And then crackers, like, pretty high up there with processed sugar for those two factors, the oil and the fact that they're highly processed without the water. We take a huge jump now. We're going to come to chocolate chips, margarine, potato chips, all that good stuff. We bump up to about 200 or 2,500 calories per pound. Why? You probably know the answer. Not only have these things got no water, they've now got a whole lot of added fat. Potato chips are deep fried. Margarine is like a pure kind of fat source, or nearly pure fat source. Chocolate is made with cocoa butter. That's pretty much a pure fat source with some sugar in there as well. So you've got these highly, highly processed elements, and then you've got a lot of fat in them, which is why the calories bump up so fast. And a lot of processed food is going to be in this kind of bucket between this kind of 1,600 calories to 4,000 calorie range. Not, things aren't typically that high because that's, like I said, that's oil. But the next jump is also pretty startling, and that's nuts. Nut butters, seeds, they work out to 2,800 calories. So nuts and seeds are actually more processed, they're more calorie dense than all these other things we've talked about so far. Why? They don't have water. That's the first thing. WWCD, water, whole foods, carbs. They don't have water. They do have fiber. They do have a lot of fiber. But remember, water's the biggest impact, and they don't have any, or very, very little. And then they're also a high fat source. So for a small amount, you're getting a lot of fat in there. So that's why, even though they are incredibly good for you, and it's important to have nuts and seeds in our diet, we really don't need much, because a small volume gives us a lot of calories. And then the highest calorie food that I have on my list is, like I said, it's oil. It's 4,000 calories. So make that huge jump again, because there's nothing else added to it. It's that purely refined product, which means that it is at the tip top mark. So hopefully this has been illuminating for you to see how these different foods stack up with these three principles. Here's a few examples of how I ask that question once I've done the first, easiest, most important questions, which is, how can I add more veggies and fruits to this, or potatoes? I do that every day, at least a pound. I snack on fruit. I snack on vegetables. I add them to my meals. And then, how can I reduce or eliminate oil? I cook without oil. I try to buy things that don't have oil in them as much as humanly possible. I limit it in my diet, processed food. And like, those are the big ones. But then I always ask myself, how can I reduce a higher calorie element and replace it with a lower? So a few examples of this is like the ice cream that I talked about. I'll simply buy a sorbet when I go out to eat. We've got this beautiful gelato place in our town. I just get a sorbet most of the time rather than a really, really creamy ice cream. A sorbet. What is it? Gelato. My mum would say gelati. I don't know why she calls it that. If you're going to eat something like crackers, I know a lot of people love crackers and hummus. Carrot sticks and hummus. Celery and hummus. You're ticking two boxes when you're reducing the calorie density, because you are eating the lowest calorie foods on the planet, and you're also eliminating oil, because crackers have oil, and you're eliminating, or you're reducing and replacing with a lower calorie element. But think about this, even if you weren't to go that far, even if you were just to have oil-free tortilla chips, not tortilla chips, but oil-free tortillas that you then toasted, yes, it's high in calorie density as opposed to carrot sticks, because It is processed and refined. It's made with flour, but it is less processed than crackers because it doesn't contain oil. And this is where it's a spectrum. So you can make that choice when you're out and about. You do not have to be perfect 100% of the time, but you can make a choice. Hey, I'm going to choose the pita instead of the crackers or instead of the potato chips. Like, that's an easy swap to make. Another example could be things like putting peas in my rice or things like edamame, because they're automatically lower in calorie density than rice, but they're just going to keep me as full. So if I've got a serving or I've got a cup of rice and a quarter of that is peas, if rice is 600 calories per pound or 500 calories per pound and peas are 400 calories, then I'm saving myself a little bit and I'm adding peas into my diet, which is amazing because they're legumes, simply by doing something really easy like that. If I'm going to have toast or bread like I talked about, I don't add butter. Not that I would because I'm vegan, but I don't add margarine because I'm like, why would I be adding that extra fat? Why would I be adding that extra highly processed calorie source? I'll just enjoy it with some jam. I don't need the butter and the margarine. Think about this. If you were to choose between a bagel and a donut, one of them is deep fried, one of them is cooked in water. Which one do you think is going to be more calorie dense? The donut. Even though they're made from the similar products initially, as soon as you deep fry something, you're adding a ton of oil to it. So it's automatically more oil, calorie dense. If I'm going to make a dressing or if I'm going to make something creamy, rather than adding oil, what if I added nut butter? Because even though, again, it's pretty high in calories, it's still much, much less. And it's a whole food, so it's got the fiber, which is the benefit because I'm not eating or I'm not absorbing all of that fiber, than the oil product. So I would much more likely, I would be much more likely personally, if I was going to make something like cookies, to add like almond butter because it's going to add some crunchiness to it as opposed to oil. I also add soy milk to baking instead of oil. I use like bananas instead of sugar, or I reduce the sugar in baking a lot of the time when I do that because it's less calorie dense. And this episode has gone on a really, really long time. I thought this was going to be short. There's a lot in this, but you can see that this is something that I know so well because, well, first of all, I just look at labels. Like, that's kind of what it is. I have a small idea or a slight idea of what goes into the processing of food. And a lot of that is just asking questions. I remember one time I was at our beautiful, amazing local gelato place. We're friends with the people that own it. And I was like, I just asked with curiosity. And I thought I knew the answer, but I wanted to know. And I said to the owner, I was like, oh, what do you put in this? Or how do you get this chocolate ice gelato so creamy? It was a vegan one. And he's like, oh, it's a fat base. Like, it's an oil vegetable fat base. And I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And I could feel it afterwards. And that's fine. Like, there's a thing. Like, I do have that very occasionally. I'll have that as a treat. I get it. I do it. I eat burgers. I do eat donuts. Like, oh, give me a donut. Like, bread-based treats, like donuts or bagels, or pastries, like I'm all over that. Like, it is a good thing we do not have vegan donuts in my town, let me tell you. But that was just a bit of a harsh reality check for me of just going like, yeah, like I could have in this situation just not asked and pleaded ignorance, but I can ask. We all have the ability to look something up or read a label or educate ourselves. Hopefully from this episode, you don't even really need to do that because I've kind of given you everything. Like, I've not held anything back. This is literally how I make decisions. WWCD, water, whole foods, so fiber intact, and carbs. Duh. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please leave me a review if you found it helpful. You probably heard about this podcast from someone else, or you probably were like, yeah, I'll give it a listen because it had some stellar reviews. It really, really helps to get this out to more people. It spreads the message. It gets us out of that cycle. It puts out some good vibes, karma, whatever you want to call it. Don't believe in any of that. But it puts some good stuff out there for someone else who is needing to lose weight or help with behavioral change. So I'd really appreciate it. I don't do any ads on this because I want to keep it pure and free of that for you and be incredibly valuable. So that's a way that you can give back to me and also pass it forward. I will see you next week for another episode. If you like this again, you can always message me, DM me on Instagram, send us an email at info@chelseamay.com. That is our email. And if you are wanting personalized help, if you are wanting to put this into practice in a practical way and get some accountability to do that, we'd love to help you. Hop on a call with our team, see if we're a good fit for Lean with Plants, our accountability coaching program, our transformation program, and I'll put the link and all the details to that in the description. All right, have a good one. Again, I'll see you next week. Bye!